This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Nicola Jenkins from REP. How are you, Nicola?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. What we're going to talk about today is a wee bit about some of the different packaging options, such as PET or PET glass, and some of the issues associated with recycling glass and what we do with recycled glass. Let's talk a wee bit about PET. Obviously, in trying to minimise glass waste or landfill waste, PET is a very lightweight container. It's quite volumetric. Still a lot of volume there, but quite lightweight. Do you guys encourage PET, or what's your position on it?
What REP focus on very much is, when one looks at the waste hierarchy, is reduction and minimisation. And that's not always about just solid weight transfer from one bottle type, so glass to PET. That's really a choice for the brand to make. So what we really do is we very much focus looking at a particular material and what you can do within that material. So REP doesn't necessarily encourage switching from one material to the next. However, what REP do encourage is when you are thinking of making a switch, because PET is not the only material that wine could go into. There's liquid cartons. Some of you would be very familiar with Tetra Pak, and that's got getting a growing precedence. Bag and box or bib is increasing, and a whole number of others. Aluminium cans, all these sorts of things. Is ultimately for you as a brand is to ask the question, does this still maintain brand equity? Does it ultimately, and in terms of environmental reasons, have a net environmental benefit? And when you put wine in a PET wine bottle, you're certainly going to get that weight reduction. So some work we did with Sainsbury's and Foster's with their Wolf Blass brand recently on PET is a PET bottle weighs 54 grams, whereas an average wine bottle weighs 488 grams.
PET doesn't get recycled as much.
It actually does to a degree. The one,
not now, council.
And that's the thing, is it's a very good point you raise, is councils vary. Glass, historically, has got a really good pickup. So a lot of councils collect it. They might not collect it curbside, but there'll be bottle banks and churches and car parks. But what's interesting with PET, and this is something a lot of people don't realise, is if you're going to use PET and you want to design it for recyclability, for want of a better word, is to use quite often PET that is clear. So what the equivalent of Flint. The reason is that those councils that do collect PET will take that. Whereas quite a lot of PET that's used for wine bottles has that greeny colour.
Yep.
Sometimes that's referred to as jazz PET, and that's not as easily recycled. And quite often, if it is recycled, it can't go into what's called closed loop. So it can't go back into food-grade recycled content and be made into another PET wine bottle or an M&S juice drink or whatever it might be. It will go into flower pots, benches, etc. And that's quite significant because it means that your environmental impact is actually going to be reduced. But it does have, going lighter does have some good environmental benefits when it comes to transport, because you're transporting less weight around, and therefore in essence you should be reducing your fuel consumption of your trucks. Quite often, lighter wine bottles made in PET are shorter and their circumference is smaller. So often you can get more wine bottles made of PET or Tetra Pak or liquid cartons because they're square. You can get a better, what's called a cube ratio on a truck.
So you get more density.
Exactly. Yes.
Sure. You mentioned a couple other things like aluminium cans, which I know some Prosecco producers were trying aluminium a couple of years
ago.
And
Rexham,
They used Paris Hilton to advertise it.
Yes.
Great look. That was, I think that was just before she went into jail.
Not so good PR.
Yeah, exactly. And there's obviously Tetra Pak, which we've actually interviewed Ben Rock Station on the show before about their Tetra Paks.
Yeah.
They're almost impossible to recycle Tetra Pak. Do you consider Tetra Pak to be a good product?
That is something I can't comment on technically, because I'm not an expert on that. What I can comment on about Tetra Pak, and that's a term that often is quite confusing, because Tetra Pak is one of many companies that make what are called liquid cartons. There are about three companies that make...
I don't think a Tetra Pak is a brand. I think it more is a product.
Yes.
It's one with the cardboard, the aluminium,
exactly,
and a plastic layer.
Yes. So in the industry, those are called liquid cartons, and there are a number of companies that make them. What's interesting with that is Tetra Pak have actually worked very hard with a lot of UK local authorities to increase the collection of Tetra Paks. So according to Tetra Pak and some work that we've done, more than 65% of local authorities in the UK actually can collect liquid cartons.
Can or do?
I can and do. That I don't know the exact, but they can collect it. The reason we know that is because RAP have recently launched with the British Retail Consortium something called on-pack labelling. And in order to have a certain type of logo that says your product is widely recyclable, more than 65% of local authorities have to collect that product. And that is the case for liquid cartons.
The only use I've heard for liquid cartons, or Tetra Pak, is egg cartons. Being recycled into air cartons. Great that they collect them, but what can you do with them?
I think, again, that's a question actually for the liquid carton manufacturers. But what we can say is that the liquid cartons that are collected do get exported to the continent, because there are no recycling facilities in the UK. And there they are broken down into the different elements. The fibre, the paper fibre, is actually a high-quality fibre, and that is quite regularly and well-received by reprocessors who use recycled content.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in terms of the actual nature of what happens to the aluminium and the other elements, I suppose they're different markets for that.
All right. So we've talked a wee bit about what happens to PET, and in another show we looked at what happened to glass as it got recycled.
Mm.
What are the big uses for recycled glass? Does it all go back into these green bottles? I know some of it goes into the road.
Mm.
What about stuff that's exported overseas? And the idea of exporting glass overseas to recycle seems like an awful waste of carbon.
Yeah. Funny enough, it's not always. And RAP have carried out some really interesting pieces of research looking at various LCAs, life cycle analyses, on transporting PET and a number of things to places like China, etc. And the environmental impact is not as large as it is made out to be. But I don't want to detract by going off on that one. What's really interesting is with recycling of glass bottles, most of the wine bottles that come into the UK are bottled in green, and we want to use that glass again. So what we are doing is we are working with the glass manufacturers to encourage them to manufacture more wine bottles. And how do we do that? We have to have a market for them. How do we do that? We encourage the increase of bulk importation into the UK so that they can manufacture green bottles with a high recycled content. So all those bottles we put in the curbside have a home to go to, and they don't have to get shifted or sent over to France or to Portugal, which is a common place for those green bottles.
How much is recycled in the UK versus how much is exported for recycling, for green bottles?
That I don't know the exact percentages.
Rough feel for
it? Oh, you're putting me on the spot there. But what I do know is it's not as high as we would like it to be. What's quite interesting, though, is what's called closed loop, so making a product that it was into the same product, is that a lot of the glass that might go to France or that goes to Portugal is very likely to be sold back in the UK again.
Mm.
So, and you know, the distances are not huge between France and Portugal. So it's not as significant as if you're transporting from the New World.
What about UK winemakers?
Yes.
You know, we do a lot about UK wine on the show.
Yes.
And the nice thing about UK wine is there's quite a lot of green glass used for sparkling wine. And sparkling wine bottles are up the high end of the, you know, closer to your kilo a bottle type thing because of the increased pressure.
Yes.
Have you got any programs to encourage the larger? Because there's five or six really big producers in the UK.
Yes. It's an area we tend not to have focused because, as mentioned before, our focus has very much been on the volume producers. However, that doesn't say that we're not working with the small industries, and we do have WSP Environmental, who are contracted as the project managers on Glasswrite Wine, and they are engaging with the UK wine industry, although I have to say that hasn't been our focus to date. Having said that, you mentioned sparkling wine, and we've actually just set up a champagne and sparkling wine task group, much to the jealousy of some of my colleagues. Little do they know that it probably won't really benefit me. But we are going to be working very much there with the UK sparkling wine industry, and there's a retailer we're currently working with who buy UK sparkling wine, and we're actually working with them on lightweighting their bottles as well. So watch the space. I wish I could reveal who that is, but that's really exciting work. The one interesting thing, if I just might put, is that lightweighting with bottles.
Waitrose,
isn't it? No, it's not. Don't try and get it off me, but it's not Waitrose.
Let me have another guess. There's only four to choose from.
And I'm a government-funded organisation, so I'm not open to bribes. So basically what's interesting with lightweighting champagne bottles and sparkling wine bottles is you've got to remember they're bubbles, and you've got to have a good, strong product to hold those bubbles. Mm. But there's still room for change.
Yep. Mm. I would have thought that, particularly with some of the manufacturers, are really starting to get quite big volumes. You know, and there's three or four that are actually producing decent volumes.
Definitely.
That you'd think that if you targeted them, you could get, you know, more than a couple of kilos off your target.
No, that's a good point, yeah.
You said that at least one UK retailer is looking to lightweight their green glass from UK wines, which is quite nice. There's a thing, and you talked about it before the interview, about greenwashing, which is, I presume, is making yourself look green but not actually doing a lot.
Exactly.
How much have the big, and it's probably mainly the supermarkets here, you know, are they really getting behind it, or are they more of a put a bit of greenwash up?
Yeah, that's again is a good question, and some of you might be aware of what's called the Courtauld Commitment.
No.
The Courtauld Commitment is a wrap set of objectives that all 92% of the UK retail sector have signed up to. So the Tesco, Sainsbury's, M&S, the Cooperative, you name it, they've signed up to this. And the main objective of that commitment is to reduce packaging weight. And we've set a number of objectives, and one of them was to reduce packaging waste being produced by the retail sector by 2008. And we actually hit that. And I know because I had to calculate all the numbers and spent my weeks in spreadsheets, so I do know we hit it. But that's across all types of packaging.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is when retailers start to look at where's the biggest weight, if we're just looking at weight, it's wine bottles. And so a lot of them have spent a lot of effort and time on wine bottles. So some very good examples would be Tesco, who have reduced their wine bottles in total by over 2,000 tons of glass, which is significant. You've got the Cooperative. They are small, but they say they've reduced their wine bottles by a total of 1,000 tons. Sainsbury's sit on our Glasswrite Wine Steering Group. We got other supporters from M&S, etc. So a lot of them, and Asda, are also, and they're not only just looking at lightweighting of wine bottles, which a lot have already started to do, but they're actually looking at increasing bulk importation because it makes good business sense for them as well.
What about the large wine specialists like the Majestics or Odbins?
Yes.
Have any of those been involved in any of the initiatives?
Not at this stage. We've had to really decide on where to focus our attention. That's not to say that we haven't opened up dialogue with them. We have. But our focus has been very much on the bigger brands. So we've worked very closely with Constellation Europe, Foster's, etc., and then the bigger retailers, because again, that's where the biggest volume is. However, we have been in dialogue with a lot of the names that you've just mentioned.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like you're really cherry picking, and hopefully that'll trickle down to the smaller things eventually.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right then, Nicola, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much.